This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Tracks on the Line, the show on Trek FM where we provide audio commentary for every episode of Star Trek Picard. I'm Mike.
And I'm Max.
And today we're going to be doing a commentary for Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 2, Maps and Legends?
Yep.
All right. So before we get started with that, a couple of things. First off, last week, there was like a whole thing where like I didn't have a teaser for the season, but you did. And we were trying to figure out why that was and if it was because of Dolby Vision and all that stuff.
Yeah. That's right.
And we took to the internet because it's not like CBS was, you know, supplying any answers or a promotion for Dolby Vision or anything like that, right? And the hive mind, the collective, worked together to discover what is going on with these episodes. And a lot of people who have Dolby Vision and everything were like, I didn't get it in Dolby Vision. And as it turns out, you need to basically put all of the tumblers in just the right order in order to get frickin' Dolby Vision in Star Trek Picard.
Yes.
So this is what you have to do. First off, obviously, you need to have Dolby Vision equipment. You need to have a TV that can display it, and you need to have a player which can play it. But it seems like maybe you need to have an Apple TV. Like, it won't work on any other device. I would love to know if that is incorrect. If anyone has been able to get Dolby Vision to work on anything other than an Apple TV, let us know. Tweet us at Trek FM.
Tweet Mike. I don't care either way.
Tweet me at Mumbles3K.
Yeah.
Then you need to play the episode through the CBS All Access app. If you play it through Amazon, or if you play it through Apple Channels or the Apple TV app or anything like that, it doesn't work. You need to play it through the CBS All Access app itself. Now, a lot of you might be going, oh, well, that really sucks because I just subscribed to get the thing through Amazon Channels. And now you're telling me that I can't? Well, apparently you can. Because there's a thing on the CBS website where under help, it will tell you how to use your Amazon account to watch it through the All Access app, allowing you to watch it in Dolby Vision.
Oh, thank God for that. What were we going to do? I mean,
I guess we were going to watch it in standard.
It was keeping me up at night, man. I was worried.
But now here's another thing, which was also discovered along the way. They've gone back and put Discovery into Dolby Vision for all the episodes, which I guess
I was gonna ask.
I guess that's how they've been in everywhere other than America and Canada through Netflix. They like Netflix already had them in Dolby Vision, but CBS did not, which. Okay, that's something right there. But Now they do. So all is right in the world. And that's how you watch Star Trek in Dolby Vision. So fun times.
It's so much fun, guys. All this talk of how to watch a thing in a different format, it's great.
No, Dolby Vision is fantastic. Oh, I mean, God. Everyone's always like 4K, 4K, 4K.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I agree with the things that you're saying.
4K is really a bunch of BS when you think about it.
Totally, man. Same page.
The overwhelming majority of movies released theatrically are not in 4K. And do you ever hear anyone being like, oh, on that 50-foot screen, look at all those pixels. I can't deal with this, pixel grid. No, nobody ever says that.
I'm okay? going to start.
No, we can't start yet because we have to talk about something else. So
I'm going to start saying that in movie theaters because I don't care about the format at all.
But Dolby Vision is pretty.
I don't, pretty, you know what? Great. I don't, that's all I'm saying. I don't care. I'm nearsighted. You know, if I take my glasses off, it might as well be 320 by 200.
No. But see, that's the thing is no matter the resolution on Dolby Vision, you got that dynamic range. Yeah,
the dynamic the blacks color, are blacks, right? The whites blacks are white, blacker and the whites there's are whiter.
A billion colors yeah, in so, between and the
so many colors.
Shading is fantastic.
I'll tell you one thing. You know what really gets me?
What's
when
that?
There's a complete absence of color banding, uh-huh. I'm like, man, that is a complete absence of color banding.
It makes a difference.
I'm going to talk to people about how good this show is because of its absence of color banding. Have you seen Picard? No color banding. Highly recommend it.
So yeah, okay. So the other thing to talk about. So this episode's maybe a little bit later than some weeks, and the reason for that is because I was out of town and I just got back. It's Sunday night right now. The Super Bowl's going on, but we're watching Picard because Picard is our Super Bowl mm-hmm. or something. And yeah, when I texted you and said, "Hey, can you record on Sunday night?" You texted me back and was like, that's fine. I'll just tweet about it between now and then or something along those lines.
Yes.
And then a few hours later, Tristan Riddell, who was a key player in cracking the Dolby Vision code, by the way.
Oh, he's the Watson to your Holmes on this particular mystery adventure?
I guess so.
Or is he the Holmes to your Watson?
I think he's the Mycroft.
No, 100%. Oh my God. Take that to the bank, man. That guy, Mycroft is awesome.
There you go. That's Tristan. I mean, everyone right here is going to the journey right now because, you know, that was his thing.
To the destination.
Anyway, he posted a little link to a thread in Twitter and he's like, whether or not you like Picard, this thread is very interesting. And then I open it up and it's you talking about Picard. And he was right. It was really interesting. You know? Mm-hmm. So I figured since, you know, you didn't save it for the frickin' show that we're doing right now, at the very least, you know, maybe you could read it. You could do like a dramatic reading of the thread.
Oh, I could do that. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
It was,
while you're doing that, I'm gonna crack open this Diet Dr. Pepper.
That's a cool idea. All right. Let me just bring it up. Okay. So I threw in the hashtag Star Trek Picard because I wasn't sure if I was going to be spoiling anything, so I figured I'd put it in there since it was the day of the episode release in some territories.
This is more boring than when I was describing Dolby Vision. Everybody knows how hashtags work.
Okay, I was just concerned. But anyway, Star Trek Picard is at long last showing us the lives of people outside of Starfleet, the innumerable outsiders whose lives are closer to our own than the vaguely military lifestyles to whom we've been so far attached. Picard is the About Damn Time Trek series. When we see a multitude of alien races together working in the same place on interconnected issues and struggle to fathom the socio-political dynamics of these near enemies being colleagues, it is because despite its idealism, Trek has been nationalistic since day one. The nation in question was the Utopic Federation, but that parasociocentric identification was still an odd sort of phenomenon of ethnocentrism, with fans seeing the Federation as us or we, and the outsiders as other. Picard is, in its dialogue to its camera work, depicting the world of Trek outside of what has always been Trek's us, and hopefully revealing to the audience how problematic that self-identification has always been. When Sisko said, "I thought I could take the uniform, wrap it around that pain, and toss them both away," he encapsulated a problem Star Trek has had for a long time. The idealized future, the ideal society, was a source of comfort and escapism. We could comfort ourselves in Star Trek and then conveniently tuck away our worries, having been to some degree calmed. Picard shows the consequence of an identity linked to a culture. When Picard discovers that the ideals of Starfleet, which he had made his own, were no longer held by Starfleet, his identity was threatened. When Starfleet carried on without him, he was lost. The subtlety of this schism is impressive. The dance of pragmatism and the Paragon losing its symbiotic rhythm, leaving the Paragon to tumble to the floor. Pragmatism might be a boring dancer, but its balance is impeccable. Starfleet carries on, lessened, and Picard. Picard wonders what else he could have done. When he surpassed the ideals of Starfleet, he left it disillusioned. Maybe he could have raised it along with him, but he failed to do so. And like Data's death, he is haunted by the question, could I have done more? Picard is precisely the show for today, a show that questions whether or not the cultural identity with which you identify truly represents your ideals, a show that features heroes without the support structure that comes with being in step with their culture's martial powers. Picard is a show which asks us if we feel represented, if our culture shares our values, and above all, can we do more? Have I mentioned that I'm into this show? Plus, you know, he's got a dog.
Yeah, he does have a dog. Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that you're into the dog, but I have to say, like, you've always been much more of a cat person, so...
I'm a pet person. Like, I love pets, I love animals, I love people's attachment to their animals. Like, I am the sort of person who has cats and doesn't have dogs, because having a dog means that you go outside.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a big no-no.
Yeah. The outside is a terrible place. Well, there are bears there.
I mean, you are in Florida, so, you know, there's also bugs and
I've always been opposed to the outdoors.
And yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, well, cool. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that, I found that to be interesting. I mean, there were a couple things there which kind of, you know, I didn't... One thing which I thought about and one thing which I didn't think about, but the one thing which I thought about, I guess, was the idea of... Starfleet being something which we as the viewer have always associated with in a positive way and have always sort of identified with in the same way that members of Starfleet or members of the Federation have. And the idea that maybe that's not the case anymore is really, for Picard, is really interesting, because that's something which a lot of people today are feeling in terms of their affiliations with their whatever.
Yeah. 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 Let's dance around the political issue, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are plenty of people who feel like where they are is not great. And that maybe the thought that they were part of a culture that held ideals, was a little bit overly optimistic, and maybe we're ahead of the culture sometimes, and that can be difficult to deal with.
And then the other thing, which I found to be really interesting, which I hadn't really thought about before, is the idea that even though we have always, and Star Trek has always portrayed the Federation as being the, I don't know, the result of everyone getting along and everyone accepting everyone else's differences and becoming this utopian future where, you know, there is infinite diversity and infinite combinations and everything. It, in its storytelling, I think more than anything, has been morphed into us. And there are a whole bunch of thems. And that's kind of interesting, because it's not something which I think even the creators are aware of doing most of the time. I mean,
no, I don't think that most people really thought about it. I think that like the idea was like, okay, Starfleet is a thing. It's an ideal future. We can be in this culture and we can explore, and these are great people and they're doing great things. And I think the problem became, it just sort of gradually rolled along, because as the decades kept going, we kept being within this one thing and we kept seeing these stories from this same perspective. And I think that's a problem when you're trying to make the argument that like, this is a lens into our reality. This is a different way of seeing human interaction when you have all of it taking place from the same club. That's a problem.
And certainly that's something which has been touched on before, I think most notably in Deep Space Nine. But
yeah,
you know, it's something
but it was
which
still
is,
it was still there. There was still this tension of like, how do we get out of Starfleet and still be Star Trek? And that's tricky. I think it's the main reason why we never had a show that featured characters primarily outside of Starfleet. And I think that one of the benefits of having somebody like Jean-Luc Picard, Patrick Stewart's like power as a performer and as the actor who played Jean-Luc Picard, that is kind of a leverage thing. It allows them to like put the character in this other place, and people are willing to go along with it because he's there and he's our way in. Because we don't need another way in. We don't need the Starfleet framework. We've got Picard.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that this may be like, you know, the gateway into that kind of thing. And the fact that they are doing, I mean, come on. It is kind of crazy that, like, they have, what, 5 shows in the works in one degree or another right now?
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully with that much diversity of product, they will be willing to step outside their comfort zone and maybe do a show about people. Maybe they don't even go into space, you know?
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with a lot of different approaches to it. I mean, I think it's crazy that it's taken this long for us to have a show that doesn't have all its main characters as part of the same organization. I think it's kind of bizarre that it took this long.
And before anyone sends an email or something like that, yeah, we know Quark and whatever, Neelix and the rest of it. But, you know, yes. Just saying.
Yeah. Like, those were still Starfleet-centric places. I mean, come
sure,
on.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Okay. So should we get into this episode itself?
We should totally get into this episode itself.
Okay. I haven't watched the Dolby Vision version yet because I've only seen it on my iPad in a hotel room and then on an airplane. So this will be an interesting experiment to see whether or not there is a preview at the end of this. But we're off to a good start because it has the correct CBS All Access logo at the front, which we are skipping over and going about 8 seconds in on this here photoplay.
Photoplay?
Isn't that what they used to call it back in the day?
Maybe.
Okay. So, Max, are you ready?
I am ready.
Then we're about 8 seconds in, but we're right before the start of the episode proper, or at least the previously on proper. And we are going to start it up in 3, 2, 1, start. And there's the previously on Star Trek Picard and
the interview scene.
Yeah. And they're doing some stuff, and he gives his little face palm thing. And he's like, because they're no longer Starfleet. And then Sydney Bristow's roommate, oh, she's gone now. And now we're into, there's that sweater.
Yeah, let's narrate the previously on so that everyone knows what's happening in the previously on.
I got that sweater. I know that makes me a bad person, but hey, you know what? Like I was saying last week, it shipped. I received that sweater in like 3 days. That's a new record for a piece of Star Trek cosplay. And let me tell you, the craftsmanship is of a very high quality, and it is super warm. I don't recommend that you get one since you live in the middle of a swamp. Mm-hmm. But if you were to, you know, move back to a normal climate, I would say grab it because it's a pretty nice sweater.
I'm not a sweater person. I don't understand the purpose of sweaters. If you want to be warm, wear a coat. If you want to be warm, wear a jacket. If you want to be not warm, wear a shirt. Don't wear a sweater. Sweaters are some nonsense, no man's land of apparel.
Oh, and I also say it's extremely comfortable. It's like very sort of like soft and not itchy. It's a not itchy sweater.
Sure.
So, yeah. Oh, never mind.
What, more sweater stuff?
I was going to say I also got that freaking necklace for my wife. That was not as of high quality, but it is still kind of cool, so whatever. I'm a terrible person. I gave CBS way too much money this week. I feel really bad about it. I will do better in the future. I got caught up in the moment. I do have one of those pins, though, too, so, you know, it is what it is.
Okay.
All right, so here we are, into the episode proper, and this guy being kind of a jerk to these androids here, calling them plastic people, and they are going to go to work at Utopia Planitia. Now, here's the thing, and this is a thing which I don't think works at all, and I think we talked about it not working on the commentary for Children of Mars, but why are they all working on the first contact day. In fact, why to make this on first contact day? And at least these guys are talking about it. They're like, oh my God, I hate this job, having to work on first contact day. And certainly all my life I've worked in jobs where I've had to work on holidays and stuff like that. But why are the kids in school on first contact day?
I don't understand this concern. Who cares if you have to work on a holiday? Okay, some holidays you work on. I don't understand why they have days off.
I don't have a problem with working on holidays. I have a problem with the story beat here, the idea that it is on first contact day. You know. Oh, and by the way, he tells this joke, like, what's brown and sticky, a stick? Mm-hmm. And then they're like, did you get it? And he's like, no. And they're like, what's wrong with that dude? I'm sorry, but I don't get it either. What the hell is he talking about? I don't understand what he means. What is the joke there? I don't get it. Does he mean because like a stick is brown and sticky? Is that what he's saying?
Yes.
Okay. That's a terrible joke. The fact that these guys were making fun of that android for not getting that joke, that's on them for telling a really stupid joke. I'm just saying.
It's a toddler's joke. it's a joke that you tell to a 6-year-old because a 6-year-old will hear that and go like, "Oh my God, that's amazing." It's sticky. Brilliant.
Okay.
You should put that on the stage.
I do think that this scene works pretty well from a structural standpoint. The idea of we've been through the intro with episode one, you know, the stage has been set, and now we're going to take a step back at the start of episode two and make this teaser an independent thing, you know, by itself and have it be sort of like a prelude. I mean, in a lot of ways, if we're going to be honest, like, this would have been a good short track, right? Like, this would have been better than Children of Mars in a lot of ways.
I don't know. I mean, out of context, it's just like, so they made a short track about androids going crazy and killing everyone?
Well, I think you would need to expand on it, but...
Yeah, so maybe a short track isn't the way to go.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. I mean, I think you need to expand on it because, like, this is, it's 5 minutes, right? So if you, it doesn't matter. That's not what they did.
Yeah,
it
works the point the way is, they had it. The point is, they're just setting up, like, some stuff about what happened. I think that they needed to do this. Like, I've heard them talk about how, like, they needed to show the brutality of this event to understand like why people are still kind of freaked out about it. Because it's been a bunch of years and people are still freaked out about it. And when you hear like they blew up the shipyards, that doesn't make you like think, oh, I understand why they're afraid. Like, that seems a little detached. So they're just trying to make you understand, yeah, this was real bad and real scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I accept it. I don't understand why they have days off. I mean, it's the 24th century. Like, can't you make your own holidays? Can't you like say I'm not going into work today? I don't feel like it. Like you work when you want to work because people are self-motivated. Why are there days off? I don't get this.
I think concern. There still needs to be some sort of structure in order to get things done in groups and stuff like that, right? I mean, I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense when you take into account the fact that there's no money, but it is what it is. So, written by Michael Chabon and Akiva Goldsman.
Yeah.
Directed by Hanalei M. Culpepper. We didn't mention her last time, but she did direct the first three episodes of this show. She's the first woman to direct a Star Trek pilot and the first Black woman to direct any Star Trek ever. So it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah. And here we are talking to some Romulans about what happened.
Yep. They've got some video of it, which is interesting.
Zot Vash. So, what do you think about that idea of the secret Romulan agency?
Well, I mean, the Romulan culture was always kind of about secrecy and conspiracies within conspiracies. So, like, if they're just doing the like Russian doll reveal, like, oh yeah, there was another one even within that one, like. I don't know why there's even any surprise about it. It seems sort of like, oh, yeah, of course the Romulans have another secret, like, police organization. It doesn't seem unlikely at all. I'm sure they have their version of Section 31. That doesn't seem surprising in the least to me. I'm on board.
I kind of like this intercutting between these two scenes where we're getting information and then expanding on that information, but in sort of like non-linear fashion. It feels very limey to me. I guess they kind of do it on like Mission Impossible as well, things like that. But I think it's an effective technique.
Well, I mean, like this is... This is the episode of Maps and Legends. Like they're establishing the parameters of the world in this episode and referencing a book by Michael Chabon.
Which book is that?
Maps and Legends.
Oh, who knew?
probably him.
I really hope that,
he probably knew.
So like when he, oh my God, please tell me that there's going to be an episode where Picard goes on an adventure with Number One and it's called Wonder Boys. Wouldn't that be great? I mean, I'd watch that.
Yeah.
You wouldn't watch that episode?
I would watch anything Picard does with Number One.
Yeah.
But if it's called Wonder Boys, like the number one D-E-R boys.
I wasn't going to take it that far, but we can take it that far.
I'm going to punch a hole through the wall.
Oh, God. So, what do you think about the Romulan scanning, telling people what happened in the past thing?
I'm okay with it. It seems fine. They've got like it's the future. They've got all kinds of weird technology in the future. We've got weird technology now. This is actually like a thing that you see in like depictions of the very near future because of how sophisticated we can get with our detection of interactions with the environment. I'm sure that there will be something similar to that.
Okay. So she had a line here which caused a lot of controversy. I don't know if I can say the word that she said. I hear that it's not as bad as the word that everybody thinks she said, but I honestly don't know. But what? There's a lot of debate as to whether or not she said a word with an E or a word with a U.
And she said it with a U, but with an accent. Whatever.
No, I think she said it. I think it's been determined that she said it with an E.
I don't care.
Yeah.
This is a silly question.
It's just become a thing. And then, of course, it's become a thing, should they be using the F word on Star Trek?
Yep, they should.
That's what I say, right? Who wouldn't want to use the F word as much as humanly possible? You know what I mean?
Well, I suppose it would get you in trouble in Sunday school.
There are certain places where you can't use it for particular reasons, but Star Trek is not one of them.
No, Star Trek is an adult show, and I think that swearing in terms of things that are marked as adult behavior, I think it's one of the sillier ones.
And also, I really have a hard time believing that anyone is really offended by the F word, you know?
No, look, grade schoolers are saying it. All right. Every kid is saying it when no adults are around. So just deal with it. It's always been there. It's always been happening. Let's just come to peace with it and move on with our lives.
Yeah. I like the idea of talking about AI and personal assistance and everything like that, because it is something which has always been in Star Trek, but really has not been in our lives until, 10 years ago, right? So the idea that now we as a society have caught up to this particular piece of technology in Star Trek, so Star Trek can talk about it in a way which we understand, that's interesting.
Yeah, they've talked about things similar to this before, and I think that the ability to get more granular about the technical aspects of it, I think, is really cool. I like that one of Picard's new friends, has this, intelligence, spy tech, hacker kind of backstory, and it's pretty cool. She's kind of a Romulan Jason Bourne character, and that's rad.
Yeah, I'm assuming that the two Romulans play a role in the Picard.
Maybe she's more like the Pamela Landy or something. I don't know.
I forget who that is.
She's the bad quotation marks guy in the first three Bourne movies.
Oh, the one played by what's her name?
Joan Allen,
yeah. Oh, she's cool. So here we're inside the artifact, and now we're getting a lot of interesting backstory about what this is and how it works and all that stuff, which I think is cool. Here's an interesting thing, though. I watched The Ready Room. And I watched The Ready Room last week as well, and both times they had the creators of the show talking about sort of the backstory of this stuff. And in both instances, I felt like they revealed information which was not in the actual show, which helped to understand the show better, which is great, but at the same time, it's almost like, okay, in order to understand the mythology, it's sort of become like a cliff notes, or not a cliff notes thing, like an appendix, a footnotes thing. to the episode. And I mean, I kind of like the idea of that existing, but at the same time, I think it's kind of weird that you have to watch this other show in order to fully understand what's going on in the show that you're watching. But I'm fine with it.
I think it's good. I think it's smart. I think it makes a lot of sense to have things in a story that are not fully explained. And if you desire to have that thing fully explained, you need to go to other places, dig deeper, and look in other places. That is a good thing, because that is more engaging and it's more interesting. And if you're not interested in that thing, you don't need to worry about it or go any further.
Yeah, that's true.
And to be honest, you don't really need to know a lot of the things that they are talking about in this, in these other things. They just kind of help us, who are steeped in this lore of this franchise for decades, to sort of like figure out how this all connects up and where like the various threads come from and how they work in context of the larger picture that we're so familiar with.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. I like
if we didn't know, like, if we didn't know like 7 years of Voyager and like all the Borg history, we wouldn't be surprised at all that there's a ship that's a cube, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we'd just be like, all right, I guess they have a cube. Oh, and there are aliens. Whatever. They're like half robot. Cool. Like the non obsessives are already comfortable with all this.
Okay. I'm going to stop you right there, because David Paymer's in the house. Woo. Am yes, I right?
He is. It has David Paymer.
Oh my God. He is the best ever person actor.
He's the best ever person actor?
I don't know. I was just, you know, throwing out whatever. I love David Paymer so much. He always cracks me up. Oh my God. If you haven't seen Get Shorty, see Get Shorty. If you haven't seen Ocean's 13, see Ocean's 13. He's fantastic in everything. And here he's playing, apparently, he was Picard's medical officer on the Stargazer?
I guess so.
Okay. So, like I said, I've only watched this episode twice. It's been while I was out of town. I've basically had no time to dig deep into this stuff or do whatever. You know, I've just been going from movie theater to movie theater for like the past week. And I just want to confirm this is, or appears to be, the disease or ailment or whatever it is that he had in All Good Things, right?
Not necessarily. It's a little bit more complicated because in All Good Things, Picard and Beverly have a little conversation, and Beverly says, like, you have this little defect in your parietal lobe, and it could cause a lot of things.
Right.
And one of those things is Iremotic syndrome.
Right. So as she was saying, like, this could happen, whatever. But like when he's talking here and he's like, someone told me that a long time ago.
He's talking about the defect that could cause a variety of syndromes. Things have changed. He could have a different syndrome caused by the same defect.
Yeah. But that actually did happen, right? I mean, like that. I mean, I know that we've been over the All Good Things time travel before, but that is actually something which did happen in a timeline.
Well, yeah, I mean, it did happen in a timeline.
It wasn't like fantasy. It wasn't like some.
No, it wasn't a delusional thing. Yeah, it was happening to a Picard. Picard had the defect. They were not aware of it until that time.
Okay. So when I saw this, I mean, aside from all that, when I saw this scene, I was like, oh, they're doing a Battlestar Galactica thing here. Like with, can you spoil Battlestar Galactica? Is it too soon to spoil Battlestar Galactica? I don't know.
No, you can just say it. Starbuck had brain cancer. And it was a big thread from season 5 to season 8 of Battlestar Galactica.
Okay. But the idea that there was a character in Battlestar Galactica who we found out after the show was over was always, they always knew that it would end with this character dying, right? And I feel like that's what when he's talked about how there's a 3-year like a 3-season plan for this, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like what they're setting up here is like this ticking clock, and I feel like he's going to want to end the show for his character in the same way that, you know, Logan was an end for, well, his character, but also Logan's character, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't think that's surprising. He's basically said as much. He's basically said, like, I want to give Picard an ending worthy of him.
So, I mean, while this is like something which is, you know, it's not imminent, right? It to me, it says like he is gonna die at the end of this series, right?
Oh yeah, he's gonna die at the end of the series. That's not a debate. That's not like are they going there with this?
You know, I think that's what they're setting up here.
They're gonna set it up a few more times. They're gonna set up a number of deaths for him.
So here we have Admiral Kirsten Clancy, which I think is a really interesting name because, for one thing, Kirsten probably comes from Kirsten Beyer, I would assume, right? I mean, you would think.
I assume it was a Kirsten Dunst reference.
That could be. Oh, my God. I was at a theater over the weekend, and they were talking about how they're going to do a secret marathon of Kirsten Dunst movies called Dunst Checks In. And I'm like, I need to move.
I think you need to burn that building down.
No, I need to go there and watch all those movies. Anyway, this Admiral Clancy is another interesting thing because, and I'm sure this is just coincidental or whatever, but the actress in this scene, she's the actress from Clear and Present Danger who plays the secretary of the guy who like gets killed in like the ambush when they're
in the car thing.
Yeah.
Capitol.
Yeah. Where he's like, come on, take call in sick. I won't tell anyone. And then the other guy is like, you know, the machine is still on, Moira. She's Moira. And she gets her neck snapped.
I am amazed that I know what you're talking about. And I'm very disappointed in both of us.
I'm just saying, and that was a Tom Clancy movie, and is the only thing that I know her from. And here she is playing Admiral Clancy. So they had to have done that just for me, right?
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, it was a shout out to you and your inability to remember this person from any other work she's done.
I mean, I guess she's been in other things. Something which I saw online, which I'm going to assume is true, is that back in the 80s, I guess, or late 70s, early 80s, or something like that. She was in, like, I guess, like a punk band called Vulcan Death Grip. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. You know? That's pretty hot.
But yeah, I don't really know anything else that she's been in. But she's in that, and that's awesome. There's a lot of people in this particular episode who have been in one thing that I know them from the 90s. David Paymer. More than one thing, but still, he's, you know, very much a 90s actor, right?
I don't know. I've seen him in a million things. I don't really associate him with any particular decade.
I guess I just always associate him with Get Shorty first, you know, and because of that, yeah. So here's a trill.
Yep. I like this this community. I like this weird tense environment on the artifact. I'm not entirely sure what Soji's job is. I don't get what she's doing. She seems to be like helping with the Borg thing, but like I'm not sure what her expertise is. It's real weird.
You know, this really reminds me of going to Disneyland in Paris. Because for one thing, when you walk in, there's a bunch of like police officers with machine guns. So that's a little weird. But then you get inside and then you've got like a guy like this, like let's say you're going to the Haunted Mansion and he's telling you like all this really terrible stuff of like how you're going to die and everything. But then he's like, if it turns green, run. You know, and like the way he says it is like, have fun, guys. You know what I mean? Like, you're going into the Haunted Mansion, you know?
I find it interesting that he gives this very, like, intimidating, like, talk to the people, but he's standing over a sign that basically indicates that nothing really has gone horribly wrong for 16 years.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the fact that they have that sign, which, by the way, you can now buy on StarTrek.com, so, Good on them, I guess. And give me the strength not to buy it because I don't know what I'd use it for, but it seems like it would be something cool to have. I don't know. It's a cool thing. It's a cool environment, and I mean, but like she says, is like, you know, Romulans love drama. You know, yep. Like I can see that, right? Like that. That's.
Yeah, he's definitely having some fun with that. And yeah. That's cool. He's having a good time intimidating people. It seems like maybe someone could complain to HR that he might be turning off new applicants.
Uh-huh.
Although Presumably by this point they've already signed some contracts or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like she says, she's like, I was halfway here, and then they said I couldn't come, and then they said I could come, and they didn't say why, you know, so.
Yep. There's a lot going on. He's a bad guy. Like, we know that he's, like, in on it, but, like, he's going to turn out to be a bad guy.
No. He's going to turn out to be a bad guy, right? But then he's going to see that what these people are doing are actually good things, and then he's going to turn back to being a good guy. You see?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we've seen his face too early. They introduced him too positively for it to not be like he's the villain.
Maybe. I don't know. But, I mean, he is one of the series leads, too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of series leads, there's Allison Pill. Hey!
Yep, it's pretty cool seeing her here. It's weird how, like, people's, like familiar faces in this context sometimes feels totally natural. She, like, just sort of slipped into Star Trek world without missing a step. Like, yeah. She's just, like, in full Star Trek stride. It's very interesting.
Well, yeah, she's a really, really good actress.
Sure, she's very good. But there's also some sort of, like, some visual thing. Like, she somehow looks Star Trek to me.
Yeah. Also, here's a really, really weird thing with this scene, right? When they do like they have a close up of the tea, and you can see the brand of tea. It's Twinings.
Okay.
Which, I mean, a few things there. First off, it's a brand of tea, right? That's weird in Star Trek just to begin with. But whatever, there's precedent for it. You look at like 09, they're drinking Budweiser and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They got Nokia phones and everything. So that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But also, like, I mean, that's something that you can buy at Jewel, you know? I feel like Picard would have, like, the fancy stuff that you have
Dillard's
to buy
at Marks and Spencer's or other regional supermarkets.
Yeah, whatever. So I just think that that's a weird touch that they added. But at the same time, I'm planning on stopping by Jewel on my way home and getting some Twinings Earl Grey. So take that as you will.
You can drink like Captain Picard.
Yep. Exactly. Because I would always go with Bigelow, right? But like Earl Grey is weird. Like different brands taste drastically different. You know, I mean, there's some which taste like Tazo is pretty similar to Bigelow. I'm assuming that Bigelow is like the, you know, the McDonald's or like the Budweiser of tea, right? And I just don't know it. That's just what I'm used to, right? I don't know.
I find it interesting. I find it interesting that you're focused on the brand of the tea. And like the thing that I was struck by in that scene is that it's not loose leaf.
Well, that's a little weird too, right?
I was like, I find it surprising that Picard is not like a purist.
Yeah.
That he would be messing around with tea bags is surprising to me.
That is definitely surprising. And he's also talking about freaking milk again. What is going on? What is going on with Picard and his milk and his tea? I don't understand. It's like we don't know him anymore.
He's offering milk for the tea.
Have you ever seen him do that before? Is there ever an instance in Star Trek The Next Generation where you offer someone milk with their tea?
I don't know if there's an instance of him offering milk, but I'm pretty sure I remember there being milk when he offered someone tea.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we need to go back and figure that out. But, yeah. Maybe we're giving them too much credit here. I mean, it could straight up be product placement, right? I mean,
Twining's got into that CBS All Access product placement thing, and they're just like directly saying, well, they didn't really put it front and center. You really had to look like
that's
hard
true.
To
yeah,
see
like
it.
I had to like pause it, and it's not even Earl Grey that they have there; it's the green tea. But you know, I'm curious about that.
So this is another one of those instances where we're seeing a Star Trek captain, in quotation marks, worrying about time.
Yeah.
It's so constant. Like, Star Trek, like, deals with, like older white men worried about how old they are all the time. It's so weird how often that happens. I'm obsessed with this moment. I've got this shot, like this sequence of like four or five shots is just like in my head on a loop.
Yeah. And why is that?
There's so much happening in it. There's so much happening. And he doesn't call anyone we know. That's so nuts. He calls a person we've never heard of before. He puts on the comm badge for the first time in the show. Like, he calls a stranger, and a stranger who would hang up on him. Also, hang up is a phrase that they're using. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. No. I just saw a thing about that online. They were talking about how we use hang up today, right? And it's like people don't hang up phone. I mean, I literally
we haven't hung up phones
right
in 20 years.
Exactly. And yet we still say hang up, right? And and it's just like one of those things, like when we talk about, oh, this film, you know, there's no film going on anymore, guys. But yeah, hang up is a thing. It's just, you know, people don't use, I mean, like I work with a guy who's 20 years old, and he didn't know that you needed to dial one before the area code on, and dial. There's another one. What are we dialing? Nothing. Anyway, speaking of, you know, 90s actors and things, here's Tamlyn Tamita, who the only thing that I know her in is Four Rooms. She plays the mom who's married to Antonio Banderas, and they have the kids, and they're going out.
Terrible children.
The troublemakers. And that,
those were terrible children.
The troublemakers. If you haven't seen Four Rooms, check it out. Don't be dissuaded by the Rotten Tomatoes score. It's very good. Especially the secrets that she's in.
What was that noise? You just like went full on The Grudge for a second there. Yeah, guys, Four Rooms is entertaining. Watch it. I'm not going to, there's nothing else to say about it. Whatever. There are parts that you're not going to like, and they're not that good. Deal with it.
But on the whole, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate this part where Picard's like, you need to be here because of the vineyard.
No. That's not him saying, like, you know, because he was just like, what, you want me to sit around and knock some bugs off of a vine? You know, he's like, you need to be here because of the vineyard. That's his way of saying, leave me the frick alone, you know? Like, yes, don't cramp my style.
Okay? But what he's saying is,
I'm going to go into the final frontier.
To maybe get killed. And I don't want to be responsible for your deaths.
Yeah.
So you guys stay here and watch my dog.
That's what it is, right? I mean, yes. That's what it is. So
they're not taking care of the super important vineyard that could be taken care of mainly by robots.
Yeah.
They're there to watch the dog.
I guess that's what it is. Yeah.
I like the idea that he says, like, I couldn't call those people that I spent all that time with because they would jump at the chance to help me out of loyalty and love, and because he remembers doing it once, even though it kind of didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. He's like, yeah, I'm going to not do that. This time I'm going to get a bunch of people who I don't know and who I'll have to convince to do this.
So, what do we think about the new Starfleet uniforms?
I think they're fine. I don't care.
Okay.
They look a lot like the old ones, but a little bit different.
They do, but at the same time, like, this is the first time where the collars haven't been, like, I don't know, high and tight. Is that a word? They feel like, you know what?
That's a term for a hairstyle.
Okay, you're right. You're right. It is. But it's a military thing, too. No, but the collars, like, they're not as, like, form-fitting as we've seen in years past. You know what they look like? I mean, the way that they have that sort of, like, loose, like, not up against the neck look with the sort of, like, weird. They look like the way Starfleet uniform costumes look on people who wear them at conventions, you know, because they're not tailored specifically to anybody, right? So they're gonna have that kind of loose thing where, like, certain places are baggier than others because of the way that it's cut in order to, you know, work on anybody, right? So that to me is what it looks like, which I think is a little weird here because, I mean, you know, like, I mean, they talk about, you know, like, Anson Mount talked about how, like, he's got two separate uniforms, one for when he's sitting and one for when he's standing, because you can't have any wrinkles in anything ever. And these, yeah, like, they essentially have kind of wrinkles. They're much more relaxed. And I think that while it looks weird on screen, it's actually going to be much better for people when they're cosplaying. So that's cool. And I do like the communicator badge a lot because it's basically just a modified version of the one that we saw in the Future of All Good Things, right?
Yep.
So they're maintaining that continuity. And it's a cool design still. Okay, now here's something which blew my mind when they were talking about it on the Ready Room with Will Wheaton, where he's like, oh, it's the Vasquez Rocks. She lives at the Vasquez Rocks. And at first I'm like, and maybe this is what he just meant, was like, that's where you shot the scene, right? But it's on Earth, right? So are they saying, like, oh, yeah, no, she's actually living at the Vasquez Rocks?
No.
Okay, because I kind of think that maybe they were. Because it's Earth, right? It's the first time that the Vasquez Rocks have represented Earth.
Yeah. Look, this is the problem with being us. Like, we have to accept that space contains a multitude of planets that have an almost identical formation of rocks.
Okay. All right.
And you know what? That is not incredibly impossible. It's totally within the realm of possibility that another planet would have a very similar section of terrain.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not like they're exactly the same. I mean, you notice the plants are different. What could explain that?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I like the idea that she lives at the Vasquez Rocks. At the same time, it makes absolutely no sense. I've been there, and it was 113 degrees that day, and there's no restrooms within a 45-minute drive.
She's got a house.
She might. I mean, they had a trailer on the site for the national park thing, and even they didn't have like running water. So that's, you know,
it's the 24th century. I'm sure she can replicate water.
Okay.
I'm sure that her toilet like flushes into a recycling system. So everything's fine. I'm sure you can drop those pods into any place with breathable air and you can live in one of those pods.
And they also have snakes there. I'm just saying. So every time I've seen this scene, all I can think about is that dude's collar. And then, like, while I was on that plane ride, I watched this. And then immediately after this, I watched Miss Americana, the Taylor Swift documentary on Netflix, which is very good.
Very interesting double feature there.
It was entertaining, I have to say. But there was continuity there because at one point they're talking about how she tweeted about that woman who was running for Senate in Tennessee, and they show a clip of the woman, and she's got a collar that looks exactly like that guy.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm just saying.
It was about the collar shape.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I didn't get a preview. Are you watching a preview right now?
Yeah, I am watching a preview.
I'm not watching a preview. So
it's great. It's amazing.
I've seen it.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's so cool. Man, when Troy runs in, that was amazing.
I don't remember that part.
Crusher waving a torch, like signaling a plane to land. It's really interesting stuff. It's really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
They're doing some cool stuff with this show, man.
It sounds crazy. It sounds crazy. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Okay. So that's about it for this week. I probably should have said this after you read your tweet storm, but what's your Twitter handle? Duh.
Oh, it's J Max Hagel.
Yeah. Yeah, so go follow that guy. If you want to follow me on Twitter, go to Mumbles3K. You can also find me at Mumbles3K on Letterboxd. So check that out. You can see my star rating for Miss Americana and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So
I will never be on Letterboxd because they don't let you rate movies with emojis and animated GIFs.
But you can review them with emojis, at least. You should get on Letterboxd. I want to keep tabs on your movie watching habits. Also, you can find the network on Twitter at TrekFM. You can also find us on Facebook in the Babel Conference, which is our listeners group on Facebook. Just type BABEL into the search field and you'll find us there. You can also find the two of us doing a show called Film Damage on filmdamagepod.com. But see, the thing is, like, we always talk about it when we're doing this show, but we're always not doing that when we're doing this show because we're doing this show instead of that show because there's too much stuff to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
It's a problem.
It's a real concerning issue. I'm worried about it. Keeps me up at night.
Yeah, it happens. What can you do? Such is life.
I don't know. I would say just be chill.
Okay. All right. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Just visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. All right. Boy, two episodes down, eight to go, six to go. How many episodes? I think there's 10 episodes of this thing.
There are 10 episodes. Okay. There are only eight to go, and I'm already in withdrawal. It's a problem.
Okay, so we didn't ask this now, but at the start of the episode, but I guess we should have, and maybe we should make this a weekly thing. Now let's see, it's Sunday night at 10:24 p.m. Central Time. Uh-huh. And the episode dropped at 2 a.m. Central Time on Thursday morning, so yeah. It's been 68 hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
And how many times have you watched episode two in that?
A very reasonable number of times. It's a number that you'd be like, okay, that makes kind of sense. That's cool.
Okay. So we know that it was eight times in the first like 16 hours for yes. episode one. So yes. 68. Hours, how many times?
It's a very reasonable number. You're going to be like, wow, I'm impressed with your restraint.
10?
Wow, okay. You're really, that was impressive. That was impressive.
How many?
Because, yeah, it is exactly 10.
All right. Hey, and how many times have you watched the first one now?
Oh, total?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. That's tougher. Since I can tell you this, since the first episode dropped, I don't know. Since the second episode dropped, I have watched the first episode 10 times.
Okay, so probably considering the amount of time in between, I mean, are we guessing like 30?
I don't know. No, probably 25 at most. That okay. seems about right. Like I put it on while I'm working, and then I'm just like, okay, all right, yeah. Show Picard again, and I feel better. Okay. Oh, he's not on screen anymore. I miss him. There he is. That's how it goes.
Okay. So, boy, but you know the fact that we recorded a couple days late means that we only have now, what, 4 days and 5 hours until the next episode of Picard drops? So until then, the line must be drawn where?
Wherever the hell Whoopi Goldberg wants to draw it.